Hello and welcome to the latest Science and Sport podcast. I'm your host, Matt Solomon, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Eric Gorman. So Eric is a strength and conditioning coach at the New York Red Bulls in the MLS, and he's dedicated the last 9 years of his career to making sure he marries rehab with the strength and conditioning process. So who better today to discuss how you can reduce the risk of hamstring injuries than Eric? So without further ado, it's time to welcome him onto the show. So Eric, welcome to the Science and Sport podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Matt. I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. So can you give us a quick introduction as to who you are and what you've been up to until now?
Yeah, no problem. So my name is Eric Gorman, and I'm actually the strength and conditioning coach for the New York Red Bulls. I've been with the club now for, this is my fourth season, and my third with the first team. So I started out with their second team. And prior to that, I actually started my career in the golf industry. Down in Florida as an assistant golf professional, worked with fitness as well. Just started training athletes, worked at a performance center with it was all kinds of professional athletes. It was golfers. It was also your weekend warriors, those individuals that just wanted to enjoy fitness, enjoy strength training. And then just through like networking, I was able to meet, I don't know if you know him, Bill Knowles. World-renowned reconditioning specialist. And I was able to connect with him. And at the time, he was overseeing the Philadelphia Union Academy. And through years and years, probably about 2, maybe 3 years of just conversations, I was able to find an opening. They had an opening as their academy strength and conditioning coach. So he brought me on, and then within 3 months, I became the head of strength and conditioning and athletic development for the Philadelphia Union Academy. The guy that was there went to the first team. So real quick, I had to hit the ground running and run U-12s all the way through our under-18s at the moment. So I spent five years working under Bill and at the Union Academy, did some stuff with our second team. And then quickly found out that I needed, I was ready for more. I was ready for that next step, which was a second team. And that's when the New York Red Bulls had a opening. So I took that opportunity, worked for the second team for a year, about a year and a half, and then got a promotion. And now I'm on my third year now with the first team.
Absolutely excellent. So that's an extensive career in football as well. And we're here to discuss hamstring injury. So I imagine yes. You've throughout all of that, you've seen a few in your time. So before we got onto all of the interesting hamstring stuff, can you walk us through what hamstrings are and what their role is in sporting performance?
Yeah, so the hamstrings are a group of muscles on the back of your thigh. I'm sure we all know about them. And the biggest role in sport performance that they play is in sprinting, is in acceleration, and then also in deceleration, which I think is a component that in the industry we're kind of lacking focus on. So basically all high intensity actions, the hamstrings are going to play an important role in your performance.
And how do they then differ between those different actions? So you mentioned accelerating, decelerating, and sprint speed, but yeah, I imagine they're slightly different muscle actions in all of those. So how are they then different throughout those different movements?
Yeah, so when you accelerate, like you have to extend the hip. So the hamstrings are very important in hip extension. And then when you're decelerating, right, eccentric strength becomes a very, very important role. And the hamstrings have to work eccentrically in order to hit the brakes. So when you're strength training, like being able to hit those type of movements and spend time in those movements is highly important.
Excellent. And what about then top speeds? How does that then differ from those two?
Yeah, you know, top speed, the hamstrings are at the most muscle activity, usually around 90-95% of one's top speed, both hitting concentrically to be able to maintain the speed. And then there's a slight phase from an isometric standpoint, and then eccentrically breaking and allowing the knee to extend and then hit the brakes and decelerate and hit the ground.
Excellent. So obviously with that in mind, that's a lot of field-based activities, right? So super relevant for footballers. Why do then footballers suffer from so many hamstring injuries? Because, yeah, see, it seems like ACL is probably the biggest one at the moment, but it seems like hamstrings for a really long time were huge. So, yeah, why do footballers get that? Is that so often? Excuse me. Great for a podcast, is. Why do footballers get the injuries like this so often?
Yeah, it's funny how you say like ACLs were pretty big and hamstrings used to be big. I think hamstrings are still the number one injury in football. And what you're asking is the holy grail question. And it's very hard to actually answer it because I don't think anybody's figured it out. And we have all these testings and we have all these modalities, and yet hamstring injuries are still on the rise. So there's three. I think there's three main moments that hamstrings can potentially cause a strain: sprinting in the late swing phase. So when the leg is extending out and before it goes to hit the ground. So and a deceleration action, and then a very big like an outstretched moment. Think about a ball over the top, and your leg kind of stretches maximally to try to control the ball out of the air. If we look at those moments in a match or in a game or in on the court or whatever sport you're playing, the hamstring is at its most extended and lengthened position. And these are the three moments that are the most popular. I think another reason why they continue to increase is we can look at fixture congestion. The ability for or inability of athletes and footballers to recover. We all know games are coming every 2-3 days, and now guys and girls are playing 90 minutes. So the ability to recover not able to recover. We can look at high intensity actions, right? Over the last 10 years, the high speed running, the sprinting, the accelerations has increased. And the amount that footballers are doing in a match in a week, and then we get from a rehab standpoint, like players coming back to training too soon or unprepared or not going through a proper reconditioning phase. I think these are all areas that why hamstring injuries are continually to be on the rise. And I think also we have to think about that this is and all these moment things that I've mentioned, that injuries are multifactorial. Like there are so many things that go into an injury, especially a hamstring injury, all injuries to be fair. It's hard to actually get a grip on why these things are happening. Like,
Can you walk us through some of those factors? Because I mean, yeah, obviously you just walked through some things football specific, like the load in a week, for example. But obviously, there's a ton of different stuff going on there. So can you talk us through what might cause or might heighten then an injury risk?
The first and foremost is previous injury. Like if an athlete has had even a knee injury and they've had surgery on their knee, that is going to affect their career later on down the road. Another hamstring injury is going to their risk is heightenedly greater. We can look at sleep. The studies say less than 7.5-8 hours of sleep increases your risk of injury. I can tell you we've had a case a year ago where an athlete did everything right, strong, isometrically strong, Nord board, like. Did everything right, tore his hamstrings, and in his 30th minute, we come to find out the last like 3 nights he got like 5 hours of sleep. He had friends over, like, so could that have caused it? Like you had like there's so many you can look at their nutritional habits. Are there omega-3s? What's their vitamin D levels have a huge impact on soft tissue injuries? Are their vitamin D levels low for that week or two or three leading up to an injury? So nutrition, sleep, previous injury. You can look at anatomically their hips. Are they aligned? Are they more anteriorly tilted in their hips, which can lengthen the hamstring? There's all kinds of different factors that play into injuries.
So when it comes to then reducing that, how can we go about reducing this fact? Because listening to some of that, there's some stuff we can't reduce, right?
Yeah,
there's obviously some things I'm like, okay, yeah, I don't know, you got a long leave or a anterior pectoral tilt, maybe you can work on that a little bit, but there's some stuff you can't change too much. But with the things that we can change, how can we start to reduce the risk of these things happening?
I don't want to sound like really cliche, but the first thing I want to say is education. I think that's number one, because a footballer comes into the clubhouse and they're there for, let's just say, 4 or 5 hours. That leaves a lot of time during the day that they're on their own. And you have no control over what they're doing. Just like you said, we can't control what they're doing. But I think we can have an impact by just educating footballers in general on nutrition, on sleep habits. How can they get better sleep? The other thing, once we're done with education, is figuring out what their limitations are. Like what do they actually need? And establishing a really good pre-activation program for them that addresses activation of hamstrings, strength of hamstrings, mobility of hamstrings. Like, what is it that they potentially need? Warm-up strategies, making sure warm-ups on the pitch are preparing footballers for the demands that they're going to face in training. I've seen multiple times where we go into a warm-up session and it's your typical dynamic movements where they're doing some butt kicks, they're doing just some general movement. But in my head, I'm like, in that next exercise, it's high acceleration, it's high deceleration, it's plyometric base. Like, are they prepared for that? Did they do enough to prepare for what they're going to face? So establishing that that protocol and those programs, I think a big one is consistent strength training. And when I say consistent, that just means a little bit every single time. I would rather have an athlete do one or two exercises every single week throughout the season than them miss a week of strength training or miss 2 or 3 weeks because of games and fixtures and not strength train. And now we have this big, now it's all right, now I haven't lifted in 4 weeks. Okay, now I'm going to do these 5, 6 exercises. Well, now I got DOMS. Now I got soreness. Now I got that going into training, which, okay, maybe that's another risk factor. Going into a training session, a sprinting session with high DOMS from a lift. So I think consistent strength training, I think the big buzzword in the field now is like microdosing. You know, that's a fancy way of saying I'm going to do a little bit every single day.
And I'm rudely interrupting Eric to make sure that you're aware of the Science of Sport Coach Academy. The Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So if you're enjoying today's podcast, you want to get your hands on some more great sports science information, all you have to do is hit the link in the show notes. You can get into the Coach Academy completely for free for the next 7 days. What's more, every time you complete one of the courses, you get a certificate of completion to prove your ongoing education. So hit that link in just a few minutes' time. And I'm interested then hear what this looks like, right? So when it comes to putting together a prevention plan, you mentioned some prehab stuff that could be really useful. And obviously, microdosing could also be a fantastic strategy. So when we're looking at someone's, let's say their gym program, how are you going to program for that person to make sure that they're reducing their risk of hamstring injuries?
Yeah, so I think my motto, and if we go back to the three main moments that hamstrings tear is under length. So one of my models when it comes to hamstring strength training is long and strong. I think there's a time that you can do leg curls. I think they all have their place. But if you look at the programs that I put together, a lot of them are placed and exercises are in when the hamstring is at its most lengthened position. Because the three most important moments that happen are when the hamstring is under a lot of length and tension. So we look at isometric long lever hamstring bridges where the knee is slightly bent, let's call it like 30 degrees. We look at glute ham back extensions or glute ham raises, you know, establishing hip extension strength when the hamstring is long. We look at barbell or dumbbell RDLs, both double leg and single leg. We look at the kickstand RDL, which is now where we can isolate the hip just a little bit and really and focus on hamstring development without on a single leg standpoint, which takes away the balance if you use the kickstand. So yeah, those are a few exercises that like are always in the program. Long and strong, best way to go.
And when you're programming those kind of exercises, obviously, yeah, that can vary in terms of what kind of physical goals you're looking for. But what kind of set and rep scheme are we looking at here? Are we looking at high rep ranges? Is it low and heavy? How does that look for you?
That's a really good question. And when you're in, I think there's two different phases you have to look at. You have to look at the off season. You have to look at in season. So off season, a perfect opportunity, higher volume. That 8 to 12 rep range, 3, 4, sometimes even 5 sets. And obviously like I would cycle through that a little bit. Maybe in off season there is a little bit of like that 5x5 program. But ultimately that's your time to get higher volumes. When you're in season, I think you start doing 8, 10 reps of things for a longer period of time. Now we're adding higher volume on top of their training, which is already high. I really like to play around with that 4 to 6 and maybe every now and then like an 8 to 10 rep on some accessory work. But those main lifts, yeah, you're going to look at 4 to 6 reps, especially in season.
And obviously, when you're programming this, it needs to kind of be combined with the ball training as well, right? So, like, how do you do that throughout the week? Because you mentioned DOMS as well. And yep. If I speak for myself, hamstrings for me are an absolute nightmare. Because as soon as I do anything, they're just destroyed for a week. and it could be like a 40-kilo RDL or 160-kilo RDL. My hamstrings don't care. They're just going to hurt. So, like, yeah. how do you plan that in and around the busy training week?
So we used to do all of our lifts on match day -4. And part of me was sitting there like saying, I want to lift the furthest away from the game for that instance, allow maximum recovery. So we don't have those DOMS feelings leading into the game. And what we have done in the last, I would say, month is focused on match day -4 is going to be a quad dominant lift. Match day -3, which is our sprinting day, we will focus on hamstrings. So the idea there is we don't want to fatigue the hamstrings too much going into sprinting day. But when we sprint and the hamstrings are highly involved in sprinting or high speed running, let's target them in the gym as well. So a big day on hamstring work is a big day on hamstring work. So we do, we're actually just using that like microdose mentality of a little bit of lower body on match day -4, and then a little bit of lower body, but more hamstring specific on match day -3.
And is that then before or after the training session? Because I can imagine if you're doing it before, you might get a little bit tired, and that's when people might get a little bit sore. So is that then after a ball session?
In our environment, yes, all the lifting is done post training. However, like there's some that pre-activation work that is done in the gym prior to training, which could be some mini bands, could be some bridges, just to get the muscles firing a little bit better. But yeah, all the gym sessions will be done post training.
And how do you then combine this with load monitoring? Because Yeah, one of the things you mentioned was that congested fixture where you got so much in a short space of time.
Mm-hmm.
How do you then, when you're training for hamstring resilience, combine that with the load monitoring side of things, where you need to make sure obviously that they're not doing a silly amount of high speed distance all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So how does that work?
We actually look at minutes played is one way of monitoring both pitch based and gym based workloads. Guys that play 90 minutes are obviously getting a higher volume of deceleration, acceleration, sprint distance, which again you can argue is strength training. You have to hit the brakes, you have to decelerate 5 to 7 times. Your body mass is happening in a force in a deceleration, so the hamstrings and muscles have to work. So one way of mitigating that so they don't overload is just simply 2 reps or 2 sets. While guys that might have not played high minutes, they might do the three sets of all the exercises, or they might get like a match day minus two little microdose lift to add in to kind of keep their strength and their stimulus comparable to guys that are playing higher minutes.
Absolutely excellent. And before we wrap up, I'm interested to hear what kind of advice you've got for young footballers as well. So let's say there's some 16 to 18 year olds listening, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, just on the cusp of breaking through, like maybe they've already had a hamstring injury, maybe they just want to avoid them. Like, mm-hmm. what's your advice for those people who are kind of embarking on their career and they want to make sure that they're not going to be afflicted by injuries like this?
The biggest one I would say is stay consistent. Stay consistent in the gym. Focus on your big lifts. I know it's very big now to go on social media and everybody's posting an exercise. And I might make people mad by saying this, but we got to stop. Like, we have to stop putting out fluffy exercises and just focus on your big lifts and your good movement patterns, lunge patterns, squat patterns, hinge patterns. Stay consistent with those, build volume through those. And then my other one is multi-planar. So sport is played in all different planes. And I think we have a tendency to say, okay, well, I'm gonna back squat, I'm gonna RDL. But what about things in the frontal plane? What about things in the transverse plane? And fluctuating your like assistant exercises and use some of those, I think is really important.
Absolutely excellent. So Eric, massive thanks for your time and effort today. It's been a pleasure talking. Where can people find a little bit more about you?
So you can reach me by email, and that's simply eric.gorman@newyorkredbulls.com. And then I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, and I'm on Instagram at GormanCSCS.
Excellent. Eric, massive thanks. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking again soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Matt. I really appreciate it.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks to Eric for all of his hard work on today's podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you do at home too. Before you leave, I want to point you in the direction of the Science of Sport Coach Academy. So the Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So if you enjoyed today's podcast and you want to get your hands on some more great sports science information, all you have to do is hit that link in just a few minutes' time and you can get into the Coach Academy completely for free for the next 7 days. And every time you complete one of the courses, you'll get a certificate of completion which will prove your ongoing education. So hit that link in just a few seconds' time. And of course, if you have enjoyed today's podcast, it'd be fantastic if you could recommend it to a coach, a colleague, an athlete, or a friend. That means that we can keep bringing you the best possible guests or the best possible content. And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks from me. I'm Matt Solomon, Science for Sport, and I'll speak to you next week.